We're going to be talking about plumbing application and design, Tim. What do you think about that today?
It works for me.
Yeah. So how you doing? Today, actually, we're recording this on the day of the eclipse, the solar eclipse, Tim.
99.4% where I'm located. How about you?
93.9, I think.
So right about 94%.
So do you think we should do like a play-by-play of the eclipse or just...
It's dark.
Yeah.
It's still dark.
Yeah.
I'm seeing light. Oh, it's light again.
So, Tim, we got a good guest on today. We've known him for a while. We've done videos with him at AHR and at their location up in Lupinor, Apple Valley, Minnesota, the Valley of the Apples. So what do you think? Should we bring him on?
Let's do it.
All right. We are excited to bring on Daniel Worm. Daniel, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing awesome. Good morning, guys.
Yeah. Morning, so man. You are the portfolio application manager for Uppner North America. More than 20 years of experience in the construction industry with an emphasis on plumbing application and design. What is a portfolio application manager, Daniel?
Yeah, that's a great question. So my team is basically responsible for managing the product lifecycle of all of our catalog products in North America. So everything, if you look through and open our catalog, if you bust open a catalog today, every product or even service now, which we'll talk about some of the services, everything that's in that catalog is the responsibility of my team. So
we did a little research, Tim and I, on your background. We did some background checks on you. But one of the things that I noticed that you were a GC, a general contractor. First of all, what were you doing as a general contractor?
Yeah, so I basically got started out working for my dad. So my dad had started his own general contracting business back in like 98, 99. And so we were basically doing all residential, pretty much everything except actual new construction. So remodels, basements, garages, windows, doors. And then we eventually started kind of specializing in decks, and it was kind of one of those like niche things where at the time in like in the area in kind of Southwest Metro Twin Cities area, there wasn't a ton of people doing it. And so we just kind of got a niche of doing decks and did a lot of stuff at that time. For TimberTech was really big at that time, composite decking. And so we kind of got in with them and, started doing a lot of stuff, a lot of TimberTech decks and maintenance free stuff. So kind of specialized in that for a while.
During your time working with your father as a GC, were there times when you used some of the current product that is part of your portfolio that you used back then?
Yeah, a little bit. So we typically on the bigger stuff, we would sub out most of the MEP stuff, but we did get into some rough plumbing stuff where we were using some Uppner. And then, you know, we had a few radiant projects we had done that we were using some Uppner products on as well. But I really didn't have much introduction until I started with Uppner in 2007. So
2007, you started with Uppner, you went to school for a certain thing. You wanted to kind of match what you did at school with your occupation. And 17 years, a long time, man. I mean,
yeah.
What is it about Uppner that, you know, the longevity of your career, you know, you could go anywhere if you stayed with Uppner for 17 years.
Yep. Yeah. I guess number one, I mean, I just have a general passion for the construction industry. So, you know, I loved being in the field. I got to 2007 and it kind of was one of those points in time. This was kind of like right before, you know, the housing bubble burst, right? So like single families flying. But at the same time, like I needed to find something a little more consistent, you know, something where, you know, had time off, paid time off, right? A 401k, all that kind of stuff. And so I started looking for like kind of drafting and design jobs and got hired on with Uppner as a plumbing designer. And I think what's been great about it is number one, it's obviously a Minnesota based company, even though the worldwide headquarters is in Helsinki. The North American headquarters has always been in Minnesota, and just the culture, I think, of the people that work for Uppner has just been awesome. Midwestern values, all that kind of stuff. And then on top of that, we just make what I believe are really awesome products. And so I think with that kind of combination of things, with the people, with a great product, I think it makes a really good company. And we've been able to do some really awesome things over the last 17 years. So.
And how many times over the last, well, maybe 10 years, have you heard, where can I get some of those worst ball products?
we still do. And it's funny because, like, for those that pay attention really closely, we still use the Wurzbow trade name on our HEPAC pipe, right? Which is our oxygen barrier pipe. And we've actually, for those that are really familiar and kind of flashback, are familiar with Joe the Toe, which was kind of the old Wurzbow, this little mascot we had, like the warm feet floor thing. We're actually trying to bring him back a little bit. So if you see him start popping up on social media, that's kind of why. But we still have the Wurzbow name floating around. And, you know, I deal a lot with some of our distributor partners too. And even them in their systems, they still have it in there as Wurzbow. So
As a product portfolio manager, how do you work with customers? I think of Uponor and I think of sustainable solutions. I think of the fluidity or the flexibility you have with your product lines. How do you work one-on-one with your customers?
So there's a couple different ways. I mean, the preferred method is always being out on job sites, right? So, and trying to do that in a way where, like, you're not, you know, impeding their work, right? You're kind of a fly on the wall and you're really watching people work to kind of figure out what their normal patterns are, if there are things that you can improve upon. Stuff like that. So we, you know, over my time here with Uponor, I've been on tons of job sites, which for me also coming from the construction side is kind of like second nature to me. So I just like being out there in general. And, you know, those are my people. But, you know, and when that's not possible, you know, obviously we do a lot of stuff too, where we'll do direct phone calls, we'll do surveys, that kind of stuff. I think we've done some focus group stuff too in the past, but usually it's trying to be on job sites, or if it's engineers or building developers, whoever it is, trying to be in the office with those guys, and really trying to listen to the problems that they have in the industry and to figure out ways that we can maybe help them, whether it's existing product or whether it be a new product or whatever that might be.
Well, one of the things that over the last couple of years you've been working on is the kitting services, which I think is a really cool idea. They say time is money. Actually, I think like miscommunication on a job site is money.
Yeah.
So tell me about like how that idea came about and how, you know, tell me about the kitting service.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'll try not to get too philosophical here as to my opinions on kind of the whole, you know, skilled labor shortage and kind of that side of it, but and kind of how we got ourselves into that predicament. But really, what the kitting service was, is it was kind of a way for us looking at kind of some of the labor challenges contractors are facing nowadays. It was a way for us to say, okay, what can we do with our existing product offering and not reinvent the wheel, but maybe look at different ways of how we're packaging that, how we're shipping it, and how we're working with customers, and to how between how it gets from like our distribution center or a distributor in general to the job site, right? How do we reduce the number of steps? How do we, you know, get it to them or to the end user exactly when they need it, so it's not sitting around collecting dust and getting lost? And so that's really how it came about. So it's literally leveraging existing products in the catalog. You know, we'll work with contractors on the design, so we get the bill of materials exactly right. And then we take all of those parts, pre-package them exactly how they want it. So like it's a, you know, if it's a multifamily building, each kit is basically a unit or a suite, and then we'll label it by room number, and then we'll ship it out by floor or by zone or however they want it. So that way it's kind of a just-in-time logistics strategy, and they don't have stuff sitting around on that's for 12th floor and they're only working on second, right? So it's taken a lot of it off of the contractor from them having to worry about it and really putting it back on Uponor to kind of manage that for them.
But how does a contractor's interested in this?
Yep.
How do they, what's the process there? How do they get involved?
Yes, there's a couple different ways. So there's actually a couple links that we could share out on our, through the Uponor website as well. Mm-hmm. You could find more information on it, but Other ways are getting in touch with your local Uponor manufacturer rep, or if you know the Uponor salesperson in the region, you can get in touch with them, and we can basically get that process started. It's pretty simple. We have a scope of work we create. It is a service, so there's a cost associated with it depending upon the size of the project. But yeah, it's a pretty awesome project and or service that we offer, and it's kind of a in between step to something else that we're working on, which is eventually to full on prefabrication. And so it's kind of an in between where we're not like physically assembling things; it's just parts and pieces in a bag. But kind of next steps after that is we're starting assembly of pieces. So
you'll do that on like up in Apple Valley, or where will you do that?
Yeah, so actually we're doing some of it right now. We do that at our distribution center in Lakeville. Okay. So right where all the parts are, we basically pull them right off the shelf, and we have some dedicated space down there where we're assembling.
Now, the last time we saw you, we were actually on site at AHR, and we shot some videos. We talked about some different products. Talk a little bit about your portfolio in general. You talked about, I know Uponor's got a big catalog, but what are some of the specific solutions and or products that, you know, in Q1 of this year or Q2 of this year that you're really focused on, or the company's focused on in general?
Last year, so this would have been AHR of 2023, we had some really big product launches. You know, to name a few, we had our Smatrix, which is our radiant control. It's a wireless control, mm-hmm. but also controls air conditioning side. So it's heating and air. We had our commercial stainless manifolds, which are they're designed for a higher flow rate. So for more like, let's say turf conditioning, snow melt applications, kitting, which we talked about, and then Total Fit, for those that aren't familiar with that, is our entry into the push connect market. And so those things are kind of the big focuses right now.
Wait, you're in charge of all these?
Yeah. I say me, but like, it's my team, right? So like we've got people on my team that are we kind of divvy it up by system types. So we've got kind of our hydronics team and our potable team and stuff. But yeah, so most of that stuff now it's out in the market. It's been out there for a year or so now, and really trying to drive awareness for those products and kind of, you know, also work with our category teams and on kind of what's next, right? So that's kind of always looking at the roadmap, but it's really those things right now. And the Total Fit, you know, push connect offering for us has been really, really cool. It's really different for us because everybody's used to our ProPex connection, the cold expansion, but we also know that there's a lot of like repair and remodel guys out there that really like the push connect fittings, whether it's permanent or temporary or, you know, whatever you want to use it for. And we have some really cool technology around that side too. So
Aquaport was one of the ones at 2023 as well, correct?
Yep. Aquaport was at 2023. So that's still kind of in its infancy.
Right. That's what I thought.
And we're still really trying to work that through kind of more like the building owner and developer side, right? Cause it's more of a long-term play there. You really have to have the right building strategy around being able to use that with your hydronic heating water. So
Tim has mentioned this in the past, on different podcasts, but, be interested to know your answer or theory on it. But, you know, over the last few years, you know, Uponor has gone through some changes, at the top leadership level. Bill Gray left and Andres Caballero. How did I say that right, Tim?
I think you hit that pretty close.
So he comes in, and now over the last year, there's been an acquisition with George Fisher. How has that changed? Maybe not. Maybe there's a seamless transition for you. I mean, has anything changed with your role? Or
yeah, so obviously we've had some leadership change. I mean, Bill was here for, man, I don't know what it was. And he's been with Uponor for a while. He started out in Canada. And then in the sales role, and then moved into our president role for UNA for like, what was it, like 7-8 years, something like that. Which was awesome. And then Andres came in, and they're very different styles. And so it's been, I think with Andres coming in, it's been really good. I mean, it's been a little bit of a spark of a different kind of energy versus Bill. And then, you know, there was also some leadership change as well prior to GF, on the Finnish side. And so they brought in some new leadership there. And the one thing I will say is it always felt, having been a Finnish company, there's always kind of like this kind of very conservative nature, it kind of felt like around like risk taking and all that kind of stuff with different certain new products and stuff like that. And I feel like we've kind of done a 180. So now it's like, okay, we're going full on. You know, we want to take risks and all this kind of stuff and put more into R&D, which has been really, really cool. So we've been really building out that R&D pipeline and investing in that group. And then George Fisher comes along, and I think that acquisition was completed like last fall. I think Q4 or Q3 last fall. And I think the cool thing about George Fisher, they're a Swiss-based company, huge company. I think they were like 3 times the size of Uponor at time of purchase. And I think the biggest thing for me looking at what's going to be possible with George Fisher now is just kind of our access to their George Fisher resources, right? Like what we had from R&D and the capabilities there is like times 10 with GF. So I think it's really exciting. We've got a lot of cool stuff we're working on. Most of which I can't talk about, but some really cool stuff there, both globally and in North America. And I think it's going to be really, really good for us. So.
Yeah. I think of GF and I think of, medical industry and a lot of medical locations. So I'm thinking that'd be a nice sweet spot for Uponor to tie into that GF portfolio.
Yeah, they've got it's really interesting with all these European companies. I think even like even Viega is kind of like GF and in the way that like in the European side, they even do a lot with like automotive in the automotive industry.
Yep.
Which is really interesting. And so like GF has like a moldings division. And then like, to your point, they get a lot into like the chemical waste and that type of stuff and industrial. So some of which isn't necessarily applicable to the North American market, but that's obviously stuff we'll be evaluating and, you know, see what we can try and bring across the pond, if you will, to, you know, meet customer needs over here. So.
Now, as far as acclimating to a new company, is there a company mandate to speak Swiss then or?
No, I'll tell you one thing though. I was really hoping for a nice little timepiece, but we got some
instead.
So
timepiece, you know, or what do you call it? The Swiss Army knife or?
Yep. It's funny. It's when we were at AHR, we didn't plan this, but George Fisher actually had a booth right across from us at AHR. Mm-hmm. And a couple of the folks there, they brought us over what on the surface looked like Swiss Army knives, but they were actually chocolate. shaped like Swiss Army knife. So, yeah.
Over there? I mean, do you get a chance? Will you get a chance to travel over there?
I'm hoping I get to go over there. I'd rather go over there for personal travel, honestly, because I know Switzerland's just beautiful. But
oh yeah,
I would hope to get over there at some point in time here. So yeah,
yeah.
So in your 17 plus years with Uponor, other than transitions like this occasionally, what's been the biggest thing that you've been a part of, or what's been the biggest challenges that you've had, both positive and negative, at Uponor or in the industry?
The one thing I'll say is that, you know, when I started in 2007, we were, you know, up until that point, we were really still a radiant company and, you know, had gotten fairly successful in the single family market, right, on the plumbing side. And once, you know, the housing crisis kind of hit there in 08, 09, we knew that we had to diversify into commercial. And so that's when we really started first kind of getting a commercial team together and kind of shifted from the design when I was in the design team at the time, really shifting focus and saying, all right, we got to start looking into the commercial space. Single family is great. It's our cash cow, but we've got to figure something out. So basically ever since 2008, 2009, we've kind of shifted focus. You know, it's been really, really good. We still have a lot of room for growth there. I mean, we've got minimal market share in commercial with PEX, right? And so there's a lot of opportunity there. And, you know, I think for me, one of the toughest things as I progressed through my career with Uponor, one of the toughest things is, even though I think because of how successful we've been with our expansion style connection and all that kind of stuff, now you start to see kind of third party, other competitors coming in from different parts of the world, right? And kind of commoditizing it, if you will. And so trying to really help differentiate and kind of prove out the value of Uponor and our systems and our components when all of a sudden you have this influx of competitors. And we've got this you know, Venn diagram that floats around within on a bunch of different slides that shows us in 2007 with like one or two PEX-A F-1960 guys. And then you go to now and it's like 20, right? And so obviously, you know, that really makes things a little spicier. So you gotta think about ways you're doing business and kind of the innovation pipeline and all that kind of stuff and making sure that, you know, you're providing value for your customers and also helping them understand the differences in quality and all that kind of stuff and support of a company like Uponor that's been around for a long time versus these kind of fly-by-night companies, if you will. So
I guess piggybacking off of what Tim just asked, you know, over the past 17 years, you know, you go to all the trade shows. What has changed or what have you noticed that has changed, like technology wise or, you know, marketing? I don't know. I'm just wondering what has changed in your view over the past 17 years?
Man, I think the one thing I'll say that's always amazing to me is, I mean, we've had the same connection method since, you know, with Aquapex. We launched Aquapex for plumbing in like 95. Mm-hmm. And we've had that same ProPEX connections method since 95. And we'll go to trade shows yet in 2024 and you still have people that are like, what the hell is that? Mm. Right. And you're like, okay. So number one, you know, it kind of humbles you, right? To realize that not everybody has seen this. So it's not assuming everybody knows it exists and all that kind of stuff. But like just technology around piping materials, you know, connection methods, even outside of PEX, right? Like, you know, you've seen like mechanical couplings and grooving take off exponentially over the last 15, 20 years, to the point now where you've got people grooving CPVC pipe, which still kind of blows my mind. And you've got other competitors of ours like Viega who are pressing onto PEX and stuff like that. So all kinds of stuff like that I think it's been really, really good. And for the end user, Cause ultimately what we're trying to do is make people more efficient, right? Like we know you have less people to do the work. We've got condensed project timelines. How do we get the same amount of work done with less time and less people? I think a lot of that is what has been driving the technology of these different piping materials and connection methods over the last 15 years, is really just kind of a concerted effort to make people more efficient. So.
If you haven't heard, Navien's new NPF hydro furnace is on the market, and they're offering an unbelievable incentive to try it. This new furnace from Navien is 97% AFUE ultra-low NOx and has an industry-leading variable capacity ranging from 15 to 100%. Right now, contractors can get a $1,000 gift card when they go to navienfurnace.com and submit their first NPF purchase info. Again, that's a $1,000 gift card. NPF purchases must be made between January 22nd and April 15th, 2024, and submitted through the form at navienfurnace.com by April 20th, 2024. See full promotion details at navienfurnace.com. Don't miss out on this great promotion.
We're pretty lucky. We know a lot of the people that work at Uponor, some very well. One of the things that I'm always, I guess I'm not surprised because we know a lot of these people and we know the culture there, but every year we always get an email from your marketing communications team that references how Uponor is once again like one of the two or three top rated places to work in the state of Minnesota. What makes it so unique and what makes that culture so cool that you guys are recognized like that every single year?
Yeah, well, it takes a village, right? I mean, I think number one, I'll go back to my comment earlier about kind of like the Midwest values thing. I think it's always been like a work hard, play hard thing, which I think in general is a really good kind of cultural mentality. We take business very seriously. It also helps that I think we sell really world class products, but you know, whether it's, you know, and you guys have been on our operations floors, right? I mean, you could eat off the floors, right? That's a testament to John Sillerud and his team on our operations side. And it kind of all starts, I think, for me, it all starts from the manufacturing process all the way through to the end users and kind of just how devoted we are to making sure that every kind of step of the way is the best it can be. And ultimately, I think it just makes for a really good company, a great place to work, right? It's kind of the old adage, right? Like if you keep your employees happy, right? You have a great product and your customers will be happy. And I think that's kind of the way I look at it. And it's been really, really good.
It doesn't hurt. Also, you said work hard, play hard, that you're in a beautiful part of the country.
We are.
And go boating or, whatever you name it. I mean,
lots of lakes. Fun fact though, Apple Valley, in fact, has no valleys. So
it doesn't have apples.
It does not have apples either. I mean, there's probably some somewhere, but I don't know why it's called Apple Valley, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to go back to the kitting services. How long were you working on that project?
Yes, so the kitting service has kind of been, we started out as an experiment back in, I got to think of my timeline here. I think like 2021 is when we first kind of started it. And really just at that time, we were basically throwing stuff into Ziploc bags, putting, I call them like garage sale labels on them, right? And handwriting things. And then kind of working specifically with some local contractors here in Minnesota on that. And then we eventually started making it more regional. And then now it's, both US and Canada.
Yeah.
So it's come a long ways. And I think, like that first year we maybe did 100 kits. And I think last year we did 8,000.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
But I was just wondering, from inception of an idea to the, the distribution and execution of the product is, maybe a couple of years or whatever.
So yeah.
You're probably working on stuff that's not going to be available till, 2025 or 26, right?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, tell us what those are right now.
And some things obviously take longer than others, right? Depending upon the technology and the scale of it. But yeah, there are a couple things I could talk about. Some other items we've got on the Radiant side, we've got some updated manifold cabinets coming out, which isn't super flashy, but it kind of coincides with our introduction of that larger commercial manifold we had a couple of years ago. Uh-huh. So now we have a manifold cabinet that you can put those into. It works hand in hand with that. We've also got some stuff coming down the pipeline on the pipe side as well. And so looking kind of at that specifically, the water service market for single family, as well as some like light commercial stuff. So having a specific service specs, different UV ratings, maybe a little different pressure ratings. This is just cold water, looking at that kind of stuff. So that'll be probably Q4 of this year of 2024. And then some pretty big stuff for next year that I can't talk about yet, but you guys will obviously definitely be on the short list of first to know when those get announced. So
last fall, John and I were able to take a trip up and we saw the grand opening of the Uponor Experience Center. I'm curious, it may not be in your wheelhouse, Daniel, but how has the Experience Center benefited and has the training that they anticipated, has it been as smoothly as they anticipated?
Yeah. Yeah. The Experience Center has been awesome for us. And luckily for me, I've got a lot of history with that area. We've kind of always had a really big emphasis on customer trainings and that kind of stuff. Even going back to you guys are familiar with Rick Mayo, Barba.
Oh gosh, yes.
Wes Cisco, right? So just the training group that is training leaders that have come through Uponor and Wurzbo. Yeah. And so we've always placed a big emphasis on customer learning and education and a lot of it at the back of the factory. So that space has been kind of a continual evolution, if you will, even since I started in 2007, and to the point where like I was even involved in the early days of like physically building the displays we had back there, a lot of the hands-on area. And then to the most recent version, which is much, much larger scale, where you've kind of got more of like a, on the front end, more of like a, you know, kind of what I call like the fluffy marketing side, right? It's good looking. It's pretty, it's sexy. And then you go into the backside and you've got the hands-on area, right? You've got areas where we can do like physical radiant panel installation. We've got overhead piping, you know, doing fusion on our PPRCT products. So yeah, it's been awesome. And seeing the people come up and see the smiles on their faces and stuff like that has been awesome. And I get to participate in a lot of our customer visits through there, to the point it's been funny because we've got this beautiful auditorium with kind of stadium seating and stuff like that where we typically present, and you'll get contractors that come through and they'll be like, guys, I don't want to sit in here. Like, this is too stuffy. Let's go sit in back where all the tools are and just talk back there. So that's kind of, it's been a really cool kind of bit of a transition. And you know, I think it's been awesome. So
Tim, what do you think? Should we do the gauntlet?
Let's do the gauntlet.
Oh,
this is more on the personal side. You have, you know, you have a family, you have kids, right?
I do.
Yeah. I was going to ask you if you could show x-rays of your broken legs. I read that you had broken a couple femurs from what, motocross or what? Well,
you guys did do a dig on me, didn't you? I've broken both my femurs. The first one I broke when I was 5, I got pushed out of a treehouse, if you will.
Oh, okay.
So that one's kind of, yeah. And then the second one, my other one I broke, yeah, racing dirt bikes. That was Easter weekend of 2000.
Wow.
Right before I was supposed to get my driver's permit, which sucked. So I couldn't move my leg. So I had to it was really awkward trying to drive. So yeah.
Speaking of driver's permit, one of the things that I know is that you've got a hot little 67 Mustang in your garage. Tell me a little bit. You mentioned before we jumped on the podcast that this was like a dream with your father, and your dad does some restoration of cars. So Tell us about the process, how long it took, and you know, kind of why a 67 Mustang?
Yeah, so I grew up, I'm an 80s kid. I grew up kind of, you know, having to listen to my dad talk about all the old cool cars he used to have in the 70s, basically right before I came along. And like when he met my mom, he had like a pretty cool 67 Chevelle Malibu that he had. And, but kind of prior to that, he always had Mustangs. And so I kind of grew up listening to him talk about that. And of course I came along and had to sell them all and buy like a Bronco or something. Right. So this is in 85. And so, you know, eventually, as I got kind of a bit older, kind of decided that like it's something I wanted to do. So we found this car, decided we were going to try and restore it as kind of this father-son project. So started that actually kind of right after I had started at Uponor, so like 2008, and then we took about 4 years on that one, finished it in 2011, and then for those that have cars know it's not ever really finished, right? So I'm always kind of doing stuff with it. So it's kind of a continual evolution to where it is now. And then we've got some other projects we're working on now. He's got a 65 Fastback we're working on, and he did a 71 for my sister. So it's a family thing. Love cars, and hopefully I've got 3 boys myself, so gives me an excuse eventually here to kind of work that and do those guys.
So eventually when your boys get older, you can pull out that old 85 Monte Carlo SS and redo one of those.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not a big Chevy guy. I mean, no offense if there's Chevy guys on here, but yeah, we'll see. I'm just going to need a bigger garage. That's all I know.
Well, very cool, Dan. Thanks for jumping on today, getting to know you a little bit better about Uponor and the processes and services that you're kind of behind the scenes, and you're like the Wizard of Oz. You're the guy that
holds. Yeah, a little bit. Yes. A little bit.
But thanks again for jumping on. We really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. And look forward to seeing you around, hopefully more than just at trade shows. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we love to come up to the land of no apples and no valleys.
Just lots of lakes.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of that, do you have a boat? Maybe we could just go pontooning or something.
I don't. You know, it's tough around here. We only have like boating weather about 5 months out of the year, yeah. So it's really tough.
Yeah, he's a car guy, not a boat guy.
Yeah,
yeah, same thing. It's really about the same usage. So
yeah, All right, buddy. Well, thanks for jumping on. Appreciate it. Have a great, great day. Enjoy the eclipse, will you?
Yeah, you guys too.
Thanks, Dan.
This Appetite for Construction podcast is brought to you in part by PERC, the Propane Education and Research Council. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially construction pros. It's a single clean energy source that can meet your project's performance, safety, and resilience goals while maintaining efficiency and lowering costs. See how propane can help meet your project's needs by visiting propane.com now. Propane, it's the energy for everyone.